This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
I would like to add the words merit into any bill that's submitted, because I think we should have merit-based immigration.
As you know, we tried for comprehensive immigration reform in the Senate. Yes. It was on the floor. There were a number of amendments. It got a lot of attention in the Judiciary Committee, and then the House didn't take it up.
And no disrespect, there's people in the room on the other side of the aisle who voted for it. If I recall, Senator Clinton voted for it. So I don't think that's comprehensive. I think that's dealing with DACA at the same time. I think that's really what the president's making.
Members of Congress on both sides of the aisle meeting with President Trump earlier today. Welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Tony is the president of the Family Research Council, and I'm the program's producer. The show is powered by the Family Research Council based in Washington, D.C. Well, another busy day on Capitol Hill. President Trump met with members of Congress to discuss immigration reform, DACA, the fate of the so-called Dreamers. We'll talk with Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies, here in just a moment. He'll weigh in on all of the analysis. It was fascinating. If you didn't see it, we got a glimpse into the world of Donald Trump and the art of the deal as he met with both Republicans and Democrats. And is there conflict of interest in the Department of Justice that impacts Robert Mueller's Russia investigation? Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona thinks so. He'll be here to shine a light on the bias impacting the investigation. And could the FBI launch a renewed investigation into the Clinton Foundation and Hillary's email scandal? Michael Bekeska, attorney with the Judicial Watch, will join us to address that speculation. Now, for all of this great information, it's archived on the web. You can find it at TonyPerkins.com. You can also follow Tony on Twitter, at T Perkins. You can follow me on Twitter, at Russ Jones Speaks. Well, as I said, President Trump held a bipartisan meeting earlier today to discuss immigration reform. The president says he's willing to cut a deal. He wants movement on the wall first, wants to see some activity on the detainees and increased number of ICE agents. And the administration allowed the media to sit in briefly for a glimpse at the negotiation process. Extraordinary, a fascinating meeting. With us now is Mark Krikorian. He's a nationally recognized expert on immigration issues, has served as executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies since 1985. Mark, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, did you get a chance to see any of that video? It's been playing quite a bit on some of the cable networks. It was really quite extraordinary.
Yeah, I watched some of it, and a lot of people, a lot of immigration hawks are upset by what the president was saying, you know, that he can do the wall in a separate measure, and maybe we can have comprehensive immigration reform, which is what the Gang of Eight wanted and what George Bush wanted before that. I don't like any of that. He's sounding like Jeb Bush. But, you know, with the president, it's not clear what he meant by any of that, quite honestly. And I think that was song and dance for the Democrats, to be perfectly honest. We saw something like that last year. Remember when he said he was going to – he had met with Chuck and Nancy, and it looked like he was cutting a separate deal with the Democrats. There was nothing to it. And I'm not sure there's anything to the truly disturbing comments, but I think there's no substance to them from today.
And, of course, Schumer and Pelosi didn't attend.
Right. It was Durbin, who's really probably the most important person in the Senate on the immigration issue. He's the one really working it. And Steny Hoyer was there, who's the number two Democrat in the House. So, I mean, and then lots of Republican leaders as well. So it was a high level, serious meeting.
In Representative Hoyer, he said Americans are frustrated over Congress, with Congress over immigration, and I'm sure there aren't too many people that wouldn't disagree with that.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about that. But the problem is not that, that the Republicans and Democrats all agree on what should be done, and It's just a matter of sort of technicalities to work it out. There are basic differences about what our immigration policy should look like. This is why I think this debate over the DACA amnesty is so useful, because the president and the Republicans have said, look, this relatively small, unique group of illegal immigrants who are different from other illegal immigrants came before they were age 16. These were people in DACA who actually signed up for this program that Obama, I think, illegally created, but they didn't break the law. The government said, here's a thing you can sign up for, and they signed up for it. That giving them amnesty is something that the president's for, most of the Republicans are for, the Democrats are for. The question is, and this is the stumbling block, is one of principle, is it wise to do that without any kind of balance or any measures that would limit the damage that any amnesty can create? The Democrats are saying, no, we just want amnesty, nothing else meaningful, our way or the highway. And the Republicans are saying, that's not negotiation. We have to have some security measures, real ones, not just FACO ones to, kind of as fig leaves, but also measures limiting future chain migration, so that when these people get their legal status, they don't just a few years down the road end up sponsoring all their relatives for immigration. That can't be allowed.
And President Trump, and maybe this has something to do with what you're saying, he said, would like to add, quote, merit into any bill. Merit-based has to be added into any bill.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, he's been talking about that for a good while. Specifically was has been touting legislation by Senator Cotton from Arkansas and Senator Perdue from Georgia that would, and this is the merit-based part, is what it would do is take the portion of our immigration system that's already ostensibly based on merit, like jobs and skills and that sort of thing. But it's a very convoluted, really a ridiculous system that is almost constructed almost on purpose to create work for immigration lawyers, and results in, even in that skilled immigration flow, doesn't necessarily always pick the best and brightest. So what the president is saying is he wants to overhaul that system and streamline it so it's much simpler. Use something like what the Canadians or Australians use, where they give you points, and you can just go online right now. Anybody listener can go online, Canada's immigration system, and you put in your education level, your occupation, your age, that sort of thing, and they give you a point total, basically. Do you clear a certain threshold to be considered for immigration? It's a much better system. I don't think it would necessarily be in a DACA deal, because that's probably something the Democrats would want to hold back until, they get something else for that.
And Representative Goodlatte, it was President Trump kind of teased a bill he's going to introduce tomorrow. Have you had a chance to look over that bill on immigration, on the illegal immigrants, on the DACA? All right. We lost Mark, talking with Mark with the Immigration Studies Organization. Going to get him back here on the phone. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. And we're talking about this really quite extraordinary meeting between Republicans and Democrats that happened earlier today with President Trump. And the administration allowed the media to look on as the lawmakers kind of debated and bantered back and forth for a good 30 minutes. And it was really quite interesting, regardless of where you stand on the issues, to at least watch the process to see where they are on the issues and get to hear from the different lawmakers and their perspectives. And then to see President Trump respond to all of the different points the different members of Congress were trying to make. Okay, we're still trying to get Mark back on the phone here to give his opinion here, and I'm going to want to hear from our listeners later in the program about your thoughts on what does it mean to you when you see the president trying to negotiate and talk between Democrats and Republicans. There's a lot of folks that would just like to see Republicans and Democrats be able to talk civilly more frequently and not just see the anger that comes out of each party and the agenda that each party has. Of course, that doesn't mean that we don't stand on what it means to have our convictions, but there's a lot of folks that would just like to see members of Congress be able to negotiate and to discuss the issues civilly without getting personal about what's going on. All right, I believe we've got Mark. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am indeed.
All right, not sure how we lost you, but anyway, what I was talking about is Representative Bob Goodlatte of Virginia. President Trump kind of teased a bill that he's apparently going to introduce tomorrow. Have you had a chance to look at that?
No, I have not seen it yet, but I've heard some pretty good things about it. It's likely to have some of the elements the president's talked about, getting rid of the visa lottery and chain migration, and also has some important enforcement changes, basically authorizations that only Congress can do to enable law enforcement to do a better job of actually enforcing the immigration laws. Also, I'm almost certain it's going to have in it something called E-Verify. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's probably the most important enforcement tool to turn the magnet of jobs off, which is what attracts illegal immigrants in the first place. And it's actually quite simple. It's not even really enforcement. All it is a free online system. It exists now. Anybody can sign up. Just Google E-Verify, and it'll pop right up. And what it does is when you're an employer and you hire somebody, you take all of their Social Security and IRS information anyway. You have to do that for withholding and all taxes and stuff. All this is you go online and check and see if it's real. Is the name real? Does it match the number? Does it match the birth date? That's important, too, because often illegal immigrants will steal the ID of American children. So it's a real name and a real number, but the person isn't in the workforce otherwise. Anyway, it's an important tool, but it's not required for all new hiring. And I'm pretty sure this bill is going to have a requirement to have that in there.
And Mark, we've got about a minute left. Just quickly here, let's talk about the elimination of chain migration, which many believe is a fundamental flaw in our current immigration policy.
Yeah, what chain migration basically means is yesterday's immigrants decide who tomorrow's immigrants are going to be. It's just immigration of relatives. And if we're talking about husbands, wives, and little kids, everybody's for that. There's no reason to limit that as long as it's all legitimate. But when you're talking about brothers, adult brothers and sisters, adult sons and daughters, parents, you end up, it sort of spins out of control. And, you know, one person sponsors family members, they sponsor their family members. That's what's got to be ended. That's chain migration, and we need to move away from that.
Well, Mark, thank you so much. We're out of time. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us on Washington Watch.
Happy to do it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, folks, keep an eye on this. We'll surely be talking about it more the rest of this week, and I'll be guest hosting for Tony through the end of this week. And that was Mark Krigorian. He's the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. And are there conflicts of interest in the Department of Justice in regards to the Robert Mueller Russia probe? After the break, Representative Andy Biggs of Arizona will be here to answer that question. This is Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, That's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
To Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Tony is taking some time away to be with his family, which we all need. Well, in December, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein was questioned in the House Judiciary Committee hearing about the clear examples of bias and conflicts of interest at the Department of Justice and within Special Counsel Robert Mueller's team of investigators. And several House Republicans have called on Mueller to resign as Special Counsel investigating Russia in the 2016 U.S. election. Well, with us now is Representative Andy Biggs, a friend of the program, a Republican who has tried to shed light on the possible conflict of interest concerns. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Arizona. Congressman Biggs is a member of the House Judiciary and Science and Space and Technology Committees and is chairman of the Environment Subcommittee, also a member of the House Freedom Caucus. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Russ, thanks for having me back on. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. Well, I read a very compelling op-ed that you've recently written. Mueller's Russia prosecutors have lots of biases and conflicts of interest. It's entitled, Here's the Partial List. Let's start off with what are some of the things that you have found to be of bias?
Well, first of all, you have Peter Strzok, who's on the committee, one of the top guys investigating. And he and his...
I think we've lost the representative and talking with Representative Andy Biggs of Arizona. And we're digging into the conflicts of interest in the Department of Justice. And he's written a compelling op-ed. I highly encourage you to go find it. It's entitled Mueller's Russia Prosecutors Have Lots of Biases and Conflicts of Interest. Here's a partial list. You need to go take a look at that. He digs deep into the concerns that many have had about the conflicts of interest and how do those get in the way of allowing a real investigation to take place without it impacting the outcome and the results. And those anti-Trump people that may be embedded into the administration, maybe Obama holdovers, whomever, people who are leaking information. And he digs into this and the Department of Justice, the Justice Department is refusing to reveal details of the process that led up to former FBI Director Robert Mueller being granted an ethics waiver to serve as special counsel investigating the Trump campaign's alleged collusion with Russia during the 2016 presidential election. And the DOJ released a one-sentence memo last Friday confirming that Mueller was granted a conflict of interest waiver in order to assume the politically sensitive post. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? And we're learning that some, that President Trump's attorneys, they want a second special counsel to probe the FBI and the DOJ for conflicts. And, you know, and this is being talked about in coffee shops all across America. People want to see justice come about. They also want to dig into the Clinton Foundation, which we're going to talk about a little later in the program. But they want to know, will these biases, will these agendas that seem to attack conservatives and Republicans, will they be held accountable? Will they be brought to justice of some kind? And reports say that President Trump could also sit down with Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigators as soon as the next few weeks. It'd be interesting to know what that likelihood is. I believe we have the congressman. Congressman Biggs, welcome back.
Yeah, Russ, good to be with you. Who knows who was messing with our phone lines? That's the...
Yeah. No, you were about to go through a partial list of the biases that you found.
Yeah, so let's start at the top. We've got the number two guy on that committee now is a heavy donor named Weissman, who's a heavy donor to the Democrats. And not we're not talking casual donations. We're talking major donations. We're talking about a guy who praised previous people who came out in defiance of President Trump's executive order with regard to the travel ban. He went out there and sent her a congratulations, saying, "You know, we need to be standing up to this president." These are not these are unusual biases. Then you move on to Strzok and his who was on the team with his paramour, a lady he's having a relationship with. She's the attorney for that committee. And they decided at some point that they needed to try to prevent President Trump from being elected. And they were conducting their relationship through emails. And we've received 350, and now we're going to get literally thousands more that we can go through to see. And some information that was reported today is those two were leaking information to the media trying to influence the election. And that's probably illegal. And these are the type of things we've got going on.
And you know, President Trump's attorneys, they want a second special counsel to probe the FBI and the DOJ for conflicts. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree that we need to get to the bottom of this. We have to find out what these conflicts are and the leaks, because these leaks, that's how we even got Mr. Mueller in the first place, is after Comey was fired. He had some documents that he, in my opinion, illegally leaked to someone in order to get into the media to manipulate it. And his buddy, someone he mentored, Rod Rosenstein, was the one who appointed Mr. Mueller. So this was all done to try to bias this special investigation. So I think that we need to be investigating that. You've got the Inspector General right now, by the way, Russ, who is inspecting and is investigating, and we hope to have something the next month or so on this. And I think that we're going to find out a lot more even.
And, you know, we're hearing reports that President Trump could sit down with Special Counsel Mueller's investigators as soon as the next few weeks, and who knows what the likelihood of that is.
Yeah, I'm hearing the same thing. Indication is that President Trump really wants to do this. This is the fact that he did not collude, he did not engage in whatever misconduct they're claiming, and he wants to be able to defend himself to Mr. Mueller, and believes that if he gets that opportunity to speak with him, that he will convince him. And by the way, Mr. Comey himself said there was no conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia to impact the election. So.
Well, Congressman, we're out of time. Thank you so much for taking time, and thank you for being a champion on the Hill.
Thanks, Russ. Good to be with you.
All right. Thank you. Well, coming up next, Federal officials may be revisiting the Clinton email scandal. We'll talk about it when we return.
Pro-Life Con is FRC's Digital Action Summit celebrating digital pro-life activism. Join us live via webcast on January 19th from FRC's headquarters in Washington. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists, as well as testimonies from families and individuals who chose life. You'll be empowered to better reach your own communities by learning from those who are at the cutting edge of the digital pro-life movement. Tune in Friday, January 19th at ProLifeCon.com.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Listening to Washington Watch, I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Digging deep into issues that we know you care about and talking about, the Justice Department has launched a new inquiry into whether the Clinton Foundation engaged in any pay-to-play politics or other illegal activities while Hillary Clinton served as Secretary of State. And an organization named Judicial Watch, we have them to thank for doing research and investigations that, frankly, many aren't doing. They've been relentless in its investigation. The organization recently received new classified emails from Anthony Weiner's laptop looking into that and have launched a couple of their own lawsuits. And joining us now is Michael Bakesha, attorney with Judicial Watch. Michael Bakesha, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, help us get into this. You know, we want to go places that other media outlets don't go, and that's why we appreciate what you all do. And Michael, tell us where you're at and what's about these lawsuits that you're filing.
Yeah, so since since Hillary Clinton was in office, Judicial Watch has continuously sued the State Department looking for information about her dealings, what she was doing, when she was doing things, and why she was doing it. And a big part of that investigation was the Clinton Foundation. When Hillary Clinton took office, she had this great system set up where she needed approval before her husband, Bill Clinton, could go speak to foreign governments or companies owned by foreign governments. And the approval that needed to be done was by her chief of staff, Cheryl Mills. And so there really was no approval at all. Bill was out there talking to people, raising, you know, $500,000 at one shot, a couple million dollars from someone else. And all at the same time, Hillary Clinton was then meeting with those people in her capacity as Secretary of State.
Now, tell us about, you have another lawsuit, the murder of a New York police officer, Philip, is it Cordillo?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Sure. We are, you know, we're looking, this was a murder that happened in the 1970s in a mosque in New York, and, you know, we're trying to get to the bottom of it. It's been an open investigation since then, and one of our investigators has been following the case almost since the beginning. And so, you know, we are suing in New York as well as the federal government to get more information about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've been to Haiti a number of times, and just follow with me here. Haiti's got a special place in my heart. And, you know, back when there was the earthquake, the most money ever in response to a disaster like that was raised. A lot of money went through the Clinton Foundation. Mm-hmm. And ask the people of Haiti or any number of other third world countries that have been visited by the Clinton Foundation about its activities. And then ask yourself, why is this quote-unquote charity hasn't been under investigation for years? Where did all that money go? You know, and I've been my own project of producing a documentary on Haiti is still in process, and there's still one remaining question, Michael, and it's where did all the money go? And I think that's a question that you all are trying to answer.
Yeah, you know, what we saw, we sued over Huma Abedin's emails that weren't on the State Department system, and what we saw was a lot of emails between her and Bill Clinton's right-hand man at the Clinton Foundation. Mm-hmm. And whether it was regards to Haiti or somewhere else, you would see emails that said, so-and-so is a good friend of the Clinton Foundation. Can Hillary make sure to pull the guy aside for 5 minutes and talk to them? And, you know, that happened a lot. But with Haiti, you also had this weird scenario where Cheryl Mills, who was chief of staff for Hillary Clinton, was heavily involved with the Clinton Foundation in raising money for Haiti, and she needed to get a special waiver when she first got to the State Department to continue working with the Clinton Foundation, but also was on the government's payroll. And so, you know, it was another weird situation where you had somebody trying to raise money, but at the same time was also playing an active part in our government. And so you had lots of weird scenarios with the Clintons, which dating back to the 90s, I guess, really doesn't surprise anyone.
Right. And you know, the fact that Secretary of State Clinton set up her own private email server, it's unquestioned. I mean, we know that. And the only question remaining now, and thanks to you all, you're trying to answer that question, is why Hillary hasn't been prosecuted and convicted and sentenced for those crimes yet.
You know, that is the question we're trying to answer. We have a lawsuit against the FBI looking at the investigative file. We want all the records about the investigation. And, you know, the government's still slow-walking those, releasing under 500 pages every month. So we're going to be getting records for months, if not years, down the road. But that is one of the big questions, is why she wasn't prosecuted. But also that for the Clinton Foundation. You know, there are media reports this week that said FBI investigators wanted to do more investigation. They wanted to start asking questions of individuals about the pay-to-play at the Clinton Foundation. And what they were told was hold off until after the election to do any interviews, because apparently people in the government, people at the FBI and the Justice Department, were concerned that if questions were being asked, I'm guessing that would have been bad for the Clinton campaign. And
well, Michael, we're out of time. Hey, can you hold on just a minute? We'll wrap this up on the other side of the break.
Sure.
That'd be great. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins.
Can a Facebook post or a tweet or an Instagram picture save a life? At Family Research Council's 13th annual Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit, pro-life activists from around the country will gather to explore the impact that digital media has on the culture of human life. Join us via live webcast from Washington, D.C. the morning of Friday, January 19th from 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists, as well as testimonies from families and individuals who chose life. At the intersection of cutting-edge technology and a passion for the lives of the unborn, you'll be educated and empowered to better reach your community on social media. With this innovative information, anyone can make an impact for the pro-life movement anytime and anywhere. Also, see live coverage from the National Mall as the March for Life gets underway. Tune in on January 19th at ProLifeCon.com. Again, visit ProLifeCon.com for more information.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Tuned in to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Tony's the president of the Family Research Council. You can find all of this great content at tonyperkins.com. You can also follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins, at T Perkins. You can follow me at Russ Jones Speaks. We're talking with Michael Bekesha. He's attorney with Judicial Watch, and he's been investigating the Clinton Foundation and the possibility of pay-to-play allegations. Michael, thanks for hanging on.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Just wanted to wrap this up. You know, many believe the FBI and the DOJ lost credibility when James Comey and Loretta Lynch let Hillary Clinton, quite frankly, completely off the hook while she was Secretary of State. You want to chime in on that?
You know, it was very disappointing to see what happened there. You had an attorney general and a director of the FBI that was unwilling to do their jobs. You know, from the beginning, we know that they didn't want to refer to the investigation as a criminal investigation. They wanted to talk about it as a matter. You know, they really wanted to downplay the severity of what Secretary Clinton did. And, you know, that's not for the FBI and the Justice Department to do.
Mm-hmm. And you know, many are wondering also what's going to happen now. I mean, is there going to be an activity that's moving forward? Some have called the Lerner Lynch cover up of the Clinton Foundation the greatest criminal cover up in U.S. history. Where are we going to go from here?
You know, it's hard to see exactly what the government's going to do, what the Justice Department, what the FBI is going to do. However, I know that Judicial Watch is going to continue fighting. We still have over 10 federal lawsuits related to the FBI, the Justice Department, the State Department, and Hillary Clinton's email scandal, as well as the Clinton Foundation, the pay-to-play, and Judicial Watch will keep on fighting. We'll keep revealing information, making it available to the public, analyzing it in hopes that, you know, at some point the public will have a full understanding of not only what happened while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, but how Director Comey and Attorney General Lynch helped cover up her misdeeds to protect her presidential candidacy.
Yeah. Well, Michael, thank you so much. We appreciate you joining the radio program today. Our listeners are acutely interested in this topic, and we'll continue to have you back just to get an update and to see where we're at.
Great. Thanks so much.
All right, Michael. Thank you so much for being with us on Washington Watch. That's Judicial Watch. Need to go check out their website. And, of course, you can find all this information at TonyPerkins.com. We put their Twitter handles and where you can find their websites. And all of our guests have that information, and we post that online. Go follow what they're doing. I'm telling you, you're going to find and see more information there that, frankly, you just won't see very many other places. So it's a caller free for all. Let's go to give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Would love to hear from you, get your insights here on, did you get to see, the Democrats and Republicans meeting with President Trump? Did you get to see any of that interactions? Fascinating. Another story I wanted to just lay before you today. This is just amazing. Vermont considers offering third gender option on licenses. Vermont residents who don't identify as male or female may soon be able to choose another gender on their licenses. I find that amazing. I'd like to get your response on that. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. The Vermont Public Radio reports the Department of Motor Vehicles' new computer system will allow a third gender option. And the Law Enforcement Advisory Board says they're not opposed to that decision. Not opposed to it. They say the group met with transgender residents to discuss the issue. You know, I reached out into Vermont today, talked to several people. It's really hard to find a conservative advocacy group in the state of Vermont. Talked to a few people. They frankly didn't want to come on the air and discuss this topic. Too afraid of the backlash. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Would love to hear from you. But we always like to hear from our listeners. Helps us to kind of get our pulse on what's going on and what our listeners are thinking. Helps us to, you're the backbone of America, the people that listen to this radio program. You are the average person that cares about the nation, that cares about religious freedom, freedom of expression, freedom of speech kind of issues. And, we lean on you. We look to you to let us know what's going on in your communities. And you can always go to TonyPerkins.com. Anytime you have an issue, something that you think we need to know about, we want to hear from you. Let's go to the phone lines. See people are calling in. And let's go to Joel in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Joel, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, appreciate you taking my call. I'm sorry I'm a little off base here with the Vermont where you segued to, but I want to back up to Hillary Clinton.
Oh, that's fine, Joel.
The Benghazi issue. apparently the debacle that happened over there was blamed by then Secretary of State Clinton on a video produced by someone that was apparently anti-Muslim, and he was subsequently jailed. Hmm. What has become of that person's plight? Is he still in jail? And will justice be met out for this individual eventually?
Yeah, can you turn down your volume there just a little bit? Joel, yeah, you bring up good questions there, and it's wish we still had Michael on from Judicial Watch. But we'll continue to research that. And have you been reading more about that?
No, I haven't at all. I've not paid much attention. All the news I get is basically from the radio on my ride home or to work.
Right. Well, Joel, thank you. I appreciate you calling with that insights, taking some notes. You're going to look into that. Let's go to Jim in Mobile, Alabama. Jim, welcome to Washington Watch. Kim, welcome to Washington Watch. Kim, are you there? Hi, Hello? Kim. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you something about this DACA. If they pass a straight DACA, or really any kind of DACA, why can't we, as the American people, sue the Congress for it being unconstitutional and discriminatory against American citizens because illegal alien criminals get amnesty, but no American citizen gets amnesty? Unless they do it for everybody who's in jail, they're discriminating against them.
Well, anybody can. This is what I know about the legal process, and a disclaimer. I'm not an attorney, but anybody can sue.
Yeah, I was hoping to get you when you had that one on there.
Oh, Michael?
Yeah. I tried the idea, but I couldn't get through to that.
Well, I think what folks need to do is know that organizations like Judicial Watch, I mean, did you hear him? They have dozens of lawsuits filed against the government trying to get information that will help them pursue these cases. So, you know, I know that they're specifically into the Clinton Foundation investigation, but organizations, when we have people on that are experts on immigration studies, at the top of the program, we had Mark Krigorian, immigration reform expert, with us talking about immigration studies. He's an expert in these areas, and there are organizations that do file these kinds of lawsuits. I'm not sure anything will come of them, Kim. That's the only problem. I think we lost Kim. Let's go to Bonnie in Shelbyville, Tennessee. Bonnie, you there?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Bonnie. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I was calling because I was flipping through my radio station on the way home from work, and I heard you bring up that third gender thing on your licenses there.
Yeah, can you believe that?
Actually, I can.
Yeah, I guess it's
gender. I guess you guys don't screen your callers very well because I'm an openly lesbian woman in the state of Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
I have multiple transgender friends and multiple people who do not identify as one gender or another. So I guess what my question for you is, why do you have such a problem with people acting and believing the way, acting who they are and coming out as who they are, as a person in today's society, when 100 years ago this would have been a major issue, and today it's not really as big of an issue because people in Flint, Michigan still don't have clean drinking water. There's still murders happening every day across the country, still mass shootings happening every day across the country. So why is what I believe, why is who I am, why is it who people who finally come out and have the courage to step out and go against the social norm and come out as who they are, why is that your issue instead of multiple other issues that are out there today? Why is that your issue with people coming out as who they are?
Because that information in that worldview is impacting, for example, children who don't need confusion.
You bring that up, but my thing is, why is that your issue? You say that children will see that and act. I mean, what I'm hearing is what you believe is children will see that and act on it. Well, no one ever encouraged me one way or the other. I was led growing up to be who I was and encouraged to do things that I was interested in. Now, why is it you're saying that children will go away one or the other? That's absolutely wrong. This is how you're born. There is no one way.
Well, see, that's where we disagree. That's where we disagree, Bonnie.
Well,
it's not how you were, Bonnie.
Scientific studies that prove
Bonnie,
that you're born
all right,
this way.
All right, we're going to let Bonnie go. The problem with Bonnie's worldview is it's not how we're born. And if Scripture is not your final authority, then this is a mute conversation. If God isn't the creator of all, who created male and female in his image, then there's nowhere to go in this conversation. So if you can't agree on that, then there's no need to continue to, you can't even agree to disagree, because it's a choice. That's where we disagree. It's a choice, and it's an unfortunate choice that people are making. Let's go to Gloria in St. Louis, Missouri. Gloria, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. I just have been wondering, why would, if Comey is in cahoots with Clinton, and they're pushing to get her to be president, why did he reopen the investigation shortly before the election? I haven't really ever understood that.
Yeah, well, that's a multi-million-dollar question that all of us are trying to understand as well. And, you know, politics has strange bedfellows, they say. And much of this is water under the bridge, if not for organizations like Judicial Watch, who continue to open up the investigation and dig into that. But the question you have is, you know, why did Comey reopen the Hillary investigation? It's a great question, and one that we'll continue to look to Judicial Watch for the answer.
Okay. Well, then I'm not only in the dark then. I appreciate the answer.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to Cameron in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Cameron, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, how you guys doing? I just have a comment for the lady who called upset earlier. It's not that, you know, we're trying to bash or, you know, hate or whatever you want to call it, you know, condemn them or judge them, but it is a sin, and it's stated in the Bible that it's a sin, and it's our jobs to, you know, in whatever way we can, to uphold, you know, God's word and to speak the truth and to let the truth be known and to stand up for what we believe in. And we don't want our kids raised to where they think that it's okay, you know, because in our belief system, now you're depending on our beliefs and our freedoms, and it's not okay, you know. I mean, it's, according to, you know, what I believe and what I my faith is, and I believe it to be true. And that's all I'll say about that. But
Cameron, you know, at what point when you can self-identify as whatever you want to identify, I mean, the identification categories become absurd and ridiculous. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, sir, I do.
I mean, what if I, you know, I'm 57 years old. What if I wanted to identify as a 20-something so I can go back and relive some things and do some things, you know, like I've talked about on this program, being sorry that I didn't serve in the military. Well, I'd like to go back and identify as a 20-something so I can go back and serve in, you know, you see where this goes?
Right, yes, sir. Well, that opens up a whole other area where you have, you know, there's a lot of transgenders and gays in the military now. And, you know, if something were to come down to where, you know, the government decided to take our guns and take our freedoms from us and to where we no longer are citizens, but we are now subjects, you know, if there was a Christian conservative in the military, he wouldn't, if he was ordered to fire upon United States citizens, he would, I believe, and I served in the military, I would not fire on a United States citizen because they wouldn't hand over their guns. Mm-hmm. And if you have, you know, transgenders and gays and just outright liberalists in the military, then you have a whole different, you know, a whole different breed, a whole different mindset, a whole different way of thinking, you know, and
right.
I mean, it could cause serious trouble, you know.
Right. Well, thank you, Cameron, for calling. We're out of time. We're at the end of our program. Wow. That was an interesting topic that got folks all riled up. And, you know, it's always good to hear from people. You've been listening to Washington Watch. Let me leave you with this. 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as, in fact, you are doing. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones. Been sitting in for Tony Perkins.
Is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.